Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
There's Terry Savage, the syndicated financial columnist, clearing her throat for what, Terry? What's on your mind today?
Because I'm thinking about what you left me with, and I see you're determined to drag me into this argument about whether all depositors should be made whole. So I was thinking of how I would answer that. And I will say that in principle, I agree 100% with those who say you take risks, you should pay the consequences. But in practice, that's something that has never happened at any point in our free enterprise system. And I particularly think back to times when I had to swallow and clear my throat for, let me go back to 2008. I was furious, and yet I had to write a column that said, yeah, I guess they had to bail out the banks and the automakers. Do you remember all of that bailout?
Sure.
Because the system was going down the drain. And then I said it to myself in the pandemic. They're going to what? They're just going to write checks to people. I mean, like literally checks in the mail from the government with newly printed money. That's inflationary. That's in principle, that's the most horrible thing in the world to do. And yet we had people who couldn't buy groceries, even if they could get Instacart to deliver. So I think this is another one of those occasions when the rationale is for the good of the entire system, we might have to compromise on principle. Some principles I can never compromise on. I don't care what you said about economics. The minute they put children in cages on the border, I said it right on your show. I said, that's it. I've had enough. That I don't compromise on integrity principles. But I think sometimes when you have to weigh the consequences of acting on principle versus the good of the multitudes, you have to compromise. And in this case, they did. And basically, everybody is insured now against mistakes. And that can only lead down the road to more problems. But for the moment, we can mostly heave a sigh of relief. That doesn't mean, by the way, that some people aren't going to lose a lot of money. There's a lot of money lost in bank shares already.
The reason that you're saying this is because if we did not make whole the people who had more than $250,000 in deposits, what would have happened? What would have happened if we had left those people hanging?
It's almost unthinkable, but if you try to parse that out, you had, on the business side of it, you had the tech part of our economy would have been gasping for air. Money is air to them. On the personal side, you know, thousands of people work for that bank. They'll probably have jobs as they wind it down, but thousands more are employees of the tech companies who banked at those banks.
Right.
So the spreading consequences, and beyond that, this bank was in a unique situation that it had big uninsured depositors, 80% were uninsured and over the limits, but every other bank also had a portfolio of government bonds that was, quote, underwater. Give me a half a minute to try and explain that part again?
Sure.
You know, we think about bank failures as they made bad loans. Remember the savings and loans and all the junky loans they made? Remember the 2008, the mortgage collapse, of course, all the terrible loans. People didn't even have income and they got mortgages and so forth. But this time, it wasn't a credit quality crisis. It was an interest rate crisis. And we all learned last year, we kept saying, wait, your 401k is down, but I've got 40% in bonds. I'm safe. They're good bonds. They're never going to default. We didn't buy junk bonds. But the prices went down when interest rates went up because someone's got $1,000 cash. They're not going to buy your old 2% 10-year bond, even if it's a U.S. government bond, when a month ago you could buy a 4% 10-year U.S. government bond. So the market value, if you had to sell, dropped to 700, 650, something like that if you were forced to sell. Of course, the bank said, we'll never be forced to sell. We're going to hold these to maturity. We'll get our $1,000 back when they mature. But in the meantime, all the depositors got scared and wanted to take their money out. And to get the money to pay them, they had to sell off this portfolio, huge losses. And that is, in a way, unique to this bank, uniquely vulnerable because of its big depositors who'd all run. But look, John, every time you and I for the last 4 months have said, I mean, I've winced a little when I've said it, don't leave your money in the bank at 2.5%. I'll show you how to get 4.5% in treasury bills. That's really what I was doing for you, showing you a better place because you weren't getting enough yield.
Yeah.
And so we were participating in that disintermediation to find higher rates too. This bank just happened to load up its portfolio with 10-year bonds at 1 and 1.5%. So the market value was dramatically lower.
Terry Savage on Wednesdays joins us. You find her at terrysavage.com. And here on Wednesday, she's here until 1 o'clock. Lots of questions from our listeners, Terry. Anything you want to say before we roll into them?
I want to say one thing. You and I have talked for weeks. Months. Where's the recession? I just want to put this whole thing in context. Every time we get a report, unemployment the lowest since 1980s. Oh, no recession. How could that be? Consumer spending is still strong. No recession. How amazing. Well, we're not really having a housing crisis yet. Slowed down and the increases have declined, but prices aren't crashing because of higher rates. Where's the recession? The leading indicators are down consecutive months. Always a sign of a recession. No recession. The yield curve is inverted. Short-term rates higher than long. Surely a recession must be around. And we looked at all the places we usually look for a recession, the unemployment numbers, consumer spending, and all those things. And we kept going, why there's no recession? We found it. We found the real-life impact of the Federal Reserve literally tripling interest rates in the last 7-8 months, going from yields of like 1% up to 4 and 5%. Mm-hmm. We found it. It didn't show up. It's like you've been scanning for cancer and it didn't register and then suddenly it erupts. And this is where it erupted in the banking system, which bought these government securities, not junk, and suddenly had to realize they're not worth full face value until you can cash them in at maturity. So this is the recession, only it's a different recession than I've ever seen or historians have ever seen. It's a recession that hollowed out the asset value of the banks throughout the nation, some to a greater degree, like Silicon Valley Bank, and some to a far, far less degree. And that's how the recession erupted through the banking system.
That's an interesting take. I haven't heard anybody put it that way, but I follow that. But then just one more macro question before we go to our listeners.
Okay.
And that is, since this will maybe pressure the Fed to keep the interest rate hike at 25 rather than 50 basis points, why are the markets so down right now?
Are you talking about interest rate markets or the stock market? The stock market is down. First of all, the reason you didn't hear that is because I've been thinking about this all morning and it was an aha moment. And I just thought, gee, you and I have talked about that whole where's the recession thing for so long. And I just went, aha, here it is. Now, the stock market is down because it fears that credit will dry up. It's one thing for rates to go up. And you and I cheer about that because we got T-bills. But it's another thing for the availability of credit to dry up when banks are scared to lend because they're suddenly looking at their balance sheets and realizing, it's another thing when the yield, the cost of credit goes up. So the stock market is basically afraid, I would say not so much of a crisis in the banking system, but now an economic crisis that comes when businesses can't get loans, when money is not so available. So that's why the stock market's down.
I got it. Well, then what about this, Terry? Let me ask this. 847 said, so is it still okay to have purchased and continue to buy I-bonds and T-bills?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so now watch this. Interest rates are down on shorter-term government securities because everybody who got scared and said, I have over $250,000, I don't believe them, I'm of uninsured deposits, finally, downloaded that thing on terrysavage.com, how to buy T-bills. And I'm telling you, if I told you how many people I know personally who said, you've been talking about this for a while. How do you do that again? Here's a link to how to do it. Yep. They all, over the last 3 days, put in orders for T-bills because it's perceived as the safest thing. So when you have a lot of demand, prices go up and yields go down. And so we have T-bills now trading around 6-month bills that we follow, all of us, 4.6%, whereas 6 days ago. I mean, a week ago, we were talking about 5.1, maybe 5.2%. So there's such a demand for them that the yields drop in that big open market trading, and that's reflected in the Monday auctions. But are they safe? Yes, it's still the safest thing in the world to do, in the whole world, although there are a couple of people out there who think, wait, maybe gold is safer. And you've seen gold rise from 1850s or 1830s, it was trading in a week ago, to $1,940 an ounce, still not an all-time high. And amazingly enough, and this is where I shake my head, a lot of people, and you could tell from the buying price going up, thought Bitcoin was safer, was the place to run to, which I think is insane because you got to get Bitcoin through the banking system and there's so many other potential problems. But still, Bitcoin is and gold have performed the best. Bitcoin still trading over 24,000. It was a bit higher than that yesterday. So the run for safety, and everybody defines it differently. I define it as 6 month T-bills.
If you miss this, this is what you missed.
About our last guest, Tom Gimbel, 773, said, this guy is telling it like it is. Dan Wilbur tweeted, I can explain Silicon Valley bank crisis in my George Bailey voice. The money's not here. The money's in Joe's idea for an Uber pool that runs on a bus schedule, and in Mary's idea for a juicer that doesn't work, and in Scott's diet yogurt he pitched on Shark Tank, and 100 others. That's what happened to the money. It's all ideas. We don't have it.
You know how long it takes a working man to save $5,000? Just remember this, Mr. Potter, that this rabble you're talking about, they do most of the working and paying and living and dying in this community. Well, is it too much to have them work and pay and live and die in a couple of decent rooms and a bath?
Philip Weiss is the president of Seyfarth at Work. Hi, Philip. Thanks for joining us again today.
Thanks for having me, John. And by the way, that impression, it was unnervingly good.
I've never done that before and didn't know I could.
What is it you want, Barry? What do you want? You want the moon? Just say the word and I'll throw a lasso around it and pull it down.
People are talking to John Williams.
And Terry Savage, that from earlier in the week. But really, I think that's the prevailing attitude. When we started this show with Terry Savage today, she said, you've dragged me into that conversation about should we bail out the people who had deposits over $250,000. But that really is what's animating people about this, as well as the broader issues you're talking about, Terry.
They bailed out the system. There's nothing more devastating than a run on the bank. You've seen all those the old Westerns when there's a stampede and they all go over a cliff. That's the danger in a bank run.
Okay, so here's some of the questions then.
Okay.
Is it still safe to have money in a savings account?
Yes, you're insured up to $250,000 and likely more than $250,000. But why press your luck? Have two bank accounts. Buy treasury bills. That's a direct IOU from the government. You know, everybody ran to treasury bills pushing yields down in this crisis. They didn't run away from treasury bills.
All right.
They ran away from uninsured bank deposits.
773 said, are each of my three accounts insured up to 250? I've got checking, savings, and money market.
No. Well, you know, I'm sitting here. You mentioned this at the beginning. The rules on FDIC, if you have a joint name account, then each of you is $250,000. But if you have three different accounts and they total up to over $250,000, it's likely you're not insured. There's no reason to leave that kind of money sitting in a bank. Buy T-bills.
What's going on with Swiss Bank, Terry Savage?
Oh, Credit Suisse. Look, this is a bank that's had sort of a shady situation for a long, long time. Their last two CEOs left sort of under a cloud. And the person to ask, you ought to call up David Harrow, who's president of Harris Associates. His funds were the largest shareholders up until months ago. They stuck it out and then they finally dumped all their stock. I remember seeing a press release go across maybe 3 weeks ago saying we're out of Credit Suisse. Credit Suisse announced totally separately than this deposit withdrawals that they were now, after having fired the previous, I think, two CEOs, then remember they were the ones that were having private detectives follow the former CEO to see who he was talking with. They've been a subject of great European intrigue. They were involved in two huge frauds that cost them a fortune. Big names, like sort of on the level of the Madoff scheme in the US and Europe, but almost at that level, all terrible things for a bank. And so two things happen. Number one, they are their biggest shareholder is now the Saudis. And the Saudis said, look, we can't put any more money in. We'll be over the 10% limit. And they announced that they had some irregularities for the two previous years in their statements they were looking into. That was enough. Everybody wanted out of there. They wanted their money out of the bank and they wanted to sell the shares, and the stock has cratered. But it's not, you know, they had a lot of problems and they skimmed by. But I think we're all now getting much more serious about looking at the banks.
No kidding.
And that's
the takeaway from all of that to me is I just thought a bank is a bank is a bank. And maybe now I need to be a little more invested, if you will, in what my
you
bank
don't.
Is. No?
No, you don't. If you're under $250,000, a bank is a bank is a bank, and your deposits are insured by the FDIC.
All right.
Period.
Here's more phone calls. Bill, you're on okay. WGN Radio with Terry Savage. What can we do Thanks. For you, Bill? You're on the air.
Thank you. I really have learned a lot from you, Terry. My question quickly is it credible that the FDIC can raise insurance premiums on banks enough prospectively to cover insured and uninsured deposits? And the Federal Reserve, I believe, has said that if not, it'll resort to the discount window. But where's it going to get the money from? The Treasury's already at the debt limit.
You've got me giggling. Did you just say, Bill, wait, the emperor has no clothes? The FDIC has no money? Is that what you said?
I think I heard that from you before.
You said the emperor has no clothes. Look, I chuckled when I heard that announcement. The last thing the government wants to do is call it a bailout. They don't want to bail out big banks and wealthy depositors. So it hasn't been called a bailout. But here are the three things they said. First of all, banks, any banks that own treasuries, we know they're going to mature at face value. So you just bring them over to us and we'll give you the cash right now at face value. You don't have to sell them in the marketplace and take your losses. So that solved one problem. Then they said, we're going to bail out all these depositors. We got the FDIC. We're going to raise the premiums on all the other banks. Excuse me, how much would they have to raise the premiums on the good banks, the big, wonderful banks, the Citibanks, the Chase, JP Morgan Chase, the major Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and so forth? The cost of doing business for them would go up so much if they had to pay these advance premiums that who would want to own their stocks? Their profits would be literally disappearing if that happened. So, yeah, the bottom line is don't tell anybody, but if push comes to shove, and in fact, it sort of did just happen, the government will, quote, print the money. I want to give you something more profound to think about, anybody who really wants to think of the logic of what you brought up, Bill. Who has the biggest portfolio of government bonds? Now you're thinking, what big bank? No, the Fed has a huge portfolio of government bonds, $9 trillion. They buy bonds in the open marketplace and pay for them with newly created money, credit in the banks. That's how they went through with all these stimulus payments. They bought the federal government IOUs and paid for them with newly created money. Now, guess whose bank portfolio of U.S. Treasury holdings has declined the most? The Fed. But the Fed never gets what they call mark to the market. They're the Fed. So just like they can create as much money, and there's no oversight of that, all they have to do is go out in the open market and buy the debt and put the liquidity into the banking system. But what they've been trying to do for the last 6 months is suck out all the liquidity they put in by selling their bonds. They've been actually aggressively selling their bond portfolios, never booking the loss, but getting rid of them and sucking the money out of the economy and raising rates. Now the Fed's really caught between the rock and the hard place. Do they keep fighting inflation or do they print?
Bill, thanks for your call. Thanks for the question. Thanks for the answer. More specific questions about your investments and more criticism of the system all coming up with Terry Savage on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We've got more business news for you now. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Several retailers have announced new locations in Chicago's Fulton Market District. Cranes reports two chains, Brilliant Earth and Everbody, have leased space in a new building at 1020 West Randolph. Brilliant Earth is a diamond merchant, and Everbody is a cosmetic dermatology provider. They'll take the ground floor retail space of the five-story building there. Retail tenants have been flocking to Fulton Market recently thanks to new developments. Others include Brooklinen, Allbirds, Mack Weldon, and Puttery. JPMorgan Chase has awarded $2.2 million to a Chicago nonprofit that provides early education, family support services, and adult care programs. Chicago Commons is one of the winners of the bank's annual challenge competition. The program is aimed at advancing equity in the U.S. Specifically, the goal is to help low-income women and single mothers of color achieve financial stability and build wealth. Eight winners were chosen out of 200 applications nationwide. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
With the business of food, here's Steve Alexander.
Thank you, and let's go to the farm. After I tell you, we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, to the farm we go, and where are you?
I am in Laura, Illinois. It's halfway between Peoria and Galesburg.
Her name is Erin Brown, and years back when I first interviewed her, her name was Erin Enley, and she was a budding professional photographer and designer.
Yep, in high school I started just a portrait photography business, just earn a little cash on the side.
And before getting married and starting a family?
I traveled all over the country taking pictures.
But making a living from photography, well, that was more challenging than she thought it ought to be. So she created RealAgStock.com, which is kind of like Getty Images?
Yep. With two main differences, we specialize in North American agriculture, whereas most of the Getty and iStock stuff is from over in Europe.
And another big difference is how much the photographers who post their images on RealAgStock.com get paid when somebody buys their work. With Getty, it's almost nothing.
From pennies per photo to like maybe a few dollars. On our site, photographers get half of gross. So whenever their photo is downloaded, they get half automatically.
Okay, well, how much are we talking?
A typical amount is $95 per photo. So they get $47.50 whenever their photo is downloaded, if it's just purchased outright.
Wow, that's got a nice sound to it.
Yes, and it's so nice to be able to offer a platform for people to get paid when they take those really beautiful pictures instead of just getting credit.
And if you're thinking, hey, I've got some great shots of farming and farmers,
they can just email me at erin@realagstock.com, or they can just reach out on the contact form on our website.
Realagstock.com. Over 13,000 images and videos available for ad agencies and others who need the real deal. Meanwhile, the Illinois State Treasurer's Office has just opened entries for this year's Cream of the Crop Agriculture Photo Contest. It's for kids 8 to 18, and how to enter and all of that at creamofthecropcontest.com. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Okay, Terry, lots more calls and questions.
Let's do it. Okay.
John, the failed banks could have hedged their investments against interest rate rises, a banking 101 concept. SVB had no risk manager for 9 months. They deserved to be shut down permanently. Do you have a comment on that?
Absolutely. Do I know about risk management and interest rates? I've been on the board of directors of CME Group, the world's largest futures exchange, for 20 years. And that's where the interest rates markets are. Of course, they should have hedged their risk, especially as the Fed kept going and going and going, raising rates. They should have. They didn't have a risk. They had terrible management. They're all out. The stock that all of the bank executives had is worthless. And all the shareholders in the bank is worthless.
So, so they're paying the price for their malfeasance then.
They are, but probably not enough of a price. Well, but they sold stock recently. We talked about that. And maybe the SEC is investigating. I would bet you lunch that they'll have to give back the profits from at least the shares they sold earlier this year.
Oh, that's interesting. A clawback. Well, then what about this? 708. If this bank was not holding the money of the ultra wealthy, would the Fed be bailing them out?
Well, the Fed bailed or created arranged marriages for lots and lots of big banks in 2008 and earlier in the savings and loan crisis. I won't even go over those historic bailouts. So yes, the Fed and the Treasury got together on many occasions. It just wasn't so dramatic because it wasn't so obvious that there was so much over the limit.
Are credit unions safe right now?
They have the same, not all credit unions have credit union insurance, but if you're in a federally insured credit union, absolutely equally as safe as a bank.
630, are money markets insured like bank accounts?
Now, money markets are not insured like bank accounts, and every once in a while in a credit crunch, people make the distinction. Some money market funds only buy overnight U.S. Treasury securities called repos, very short-term, very liquid, and very safe. Others buy commercial paper issued by corporations, and people flock to those because you get a slightly higher yield. They're supposed to always be worth a dollar. Only once did a money market fund temporarily break the buck. That is, you put a dollar in, you always get a dollar out because they're so liquid. But unless you have a treasury bill only money market fund like Capital Preservation Fund, that's as safe as treasury bills. But the ones that buy commercial paper, and these are really narrow discrepancies here.
Not enough.
But if you don't want to worry, go buy treasury bills.
All right, here's
how to buy treasury bills at terrysavage.com.
2 minutes left. Ben, you're on WGN with Terry. What's your question?
Hey, Terry, how are you? I have $32,000 in student loans left. I pay $1,000 a month. I also put $5,000 a year in my Roth. I'm wondering if I should diminish the Roth a little bit and cut off these student loans.
Wait.
At the same time, I want to retire, and have money in the bank.
I know. But wait, right now, wait. I don't know if you'll qualify. They're federal student loans?
You know what? I shot myself in the foot. I had federal student loans, and I switched to SoFi for a $500 sign-on bonus.
Okay, sure.
And that one's over. And my brother just got $42,000 replenished with 10 years of government work.
He did 10 years of on-time payments as a public service loan forgiveness. Okay, so you have private student loans.
I'm a public employee.
The truth is, I think I've come down on the side of paying down those student loans. There's none of this forgiveness is going to apply to them. It's building interest on interest. And even though the rates are not at the credit card rate level, I would suggest, since the Roth IRA is probably appropriately at your age invested in stocks, and this could be an iffy period for stocks, I would go right at that student loan debt right now and short the Roth IRA. You're not getting a tax deduction anyway. Yeah, I'd come down on the side of paying down your student loans since you won't get forgiveness.
By the way, if there are ways to convert loans, and it might not be a bad idea just to call Kaplan Law and see if Ray Kaplan, Kaplan Law Firm here in Chicago, can manage that debt for you. $1,000 a month sounds like a heavy lift.
Yeah, but private student loans are different than federal student loans.
Yeah,
you could go to SoFi or some other place. But the real, that sounds like $32,000, you could attack that pretty quickly. And this would be a good time, perhaps, to avoid investing in the stock market for a while and then catch up later.
Terry, we're out of time. We'll talk more next Wednesday and probably before then, just given the fluidity of the situation right now. But thank, as always, for your advice.
Thanks. Always on standby for you, John.
That's Terry Savage. You hear her throughout the days here on WGN.